Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Echoes. I'm Deborah Niedermeyer. Anthropologist and author Dick Nelson gave a talk at the University of Alaska Museum last spring, and we're presenting portions of it in this series. The lecture was called Eyes of the Forest and deals with how the Koyukon Athabascan Indians view the natural world and how different that view is from the Western view. Nelson explains that for the Koyukon, all nature, animals, and even things possess something which can be best described as a spirit. Such spirits are absolutely real to those Koyukon who have been raised in the traditional beliefs.
The code of behavior toward these spirits is bound up with a multitude of taboos, which are called hutlani in Koyukon. Some species of animals have hundreds, and I mean this literally, hundreds of taboos surrounding them. Others have only a few. The less powerful ones have very few. These taboos apply to the treatment of living plants and animals, to parts of plants and animals that are no longer living, in other words, to their carcasses, to their bodies, to meat and this sort of thing, and to physical things. This is a subject that I could go on for a long time. Let me just give you a few examples, like a little sampling plucked out from all the constellation of these taboos. It is tabooed to intentionally trap a porcupine. If it happens by accident, it's all right. A woman who intentionally trapped a porcupine had her leg wither. To imitate the call of an olive-sided flycatcher, which is called dochtsini in Koyukon, which if you know the call of the bird, you will recognize that it's very similar, cause you a very slow and agonizing death. That's true. To scrape moose hides, moose skins at night. To look into the nest of a hoary redpole will cause bad weather. Somebody around here must have been doing that lately. To wear lynx hide clothing if you're a woman, a very dangerous thing. To eat meat from any waterfowl that are called tuwaga, that means a water bird. The clumsy waterfowl, the grebes, the loons, those kinds of birds. For a young person or a fertile woman to eat the meat of any of those animals, it will cause their children to be clumsy and slow. To point at a mountain or star. As a woman explained to me about pointing at mountains, she said, it isn't right for people to point at something that's so great. He said, it's like pointing at a stranger. And so on, so on. There are thousands of these things. Other manifestations of these spirits are perhaps less dangerous or less centered around the defense of the creature involved. Spirituality constantly impinges on people in various ways. Think about this. Signs. Omens can come through the spirits of animals. A short burst in a campfire on a calm night, as if a gust has struck it, is a manifestation of Ahtsih Doyiga, the wind spirit, or a wind spirit, a sign that a strong wind is coming. Strange events in nature are received as omens. A woman who found an owl dead in her fishnet, her daughter later died. A woman who heard a raven call in the night. Shortly afterward, her brother-in-law died. The lesser yellowlegs, you know, has a habit of flying up, especially along the shore of water, and calling and calling and calling incessantly. In Koyukon, saying, siyit, 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 siyit. If you shout at it, siyit, and it stops calling soon afterward, you will have a short life. If you have the nerve to call at it and it keeps calling for a long time, you're in luck. Hearing a fox barking, especially in the fall when they rarely do, I'm told, means that a death will come soon. You can negate it, or at least try to negate it, by shouting back, go and die yourself, wishing the warning under the fox so that it might die instead. Signs from nature express the power of natural spirits to know the future. But they're more than that, because the sign is often a causative thing. So, for example, you can wish it back on the fox. It's almost as if the sign is the thing that brings the event. So wish it back, and the event may go to someone else. There are lots and lots of examples of this. Not all signs are bad. If you see the raven flying along, and it goes, gaga, gaga, like that, gaga is the word for animal. It can lead you to an animal somewhere. People have told me stories of, I heard the raven do this, and I followed it, and sure enough, there was a moose atop the bank, or something like that. The horned owl repeating, you will eat, in Koyukon. A good sign of hunting luck. Spirit powers can be used in other ways, beneficially to people. For example, in the extremely rare event that somebody manages to get a flicker, to shoot a flicker, which you can hear in the woods plenty, but you can't get close to them. Or manages to catch a least weasel, which is not that common an animal. At least I don't see the track of it that often. If you can get the skin of this animal, it's the most powerful amulet that's known in the Koyukon world. One man I knew kept his flicker skin hanging right next to his bed. People sometimes move it around with them when they go from one place to another. For luck, it's powerful. It's good. Other things like the down of a swan can be used in positive ways. It's like an amulet. A piece of dried fish skin, for example, sewn into the webbing of a snowshoe to protect against encounters with dangerous things that can't be seen in the forest. There are also prayers or requests to natural things for help. Most importantly, to the raven, which is one of the most powerful animals in the boreal forest, although also one of the most foolish. The raven flies or roosts nearby, and a person may call to it, Tsikash, bring me luck. Or Tsikash, which means old grandfather or something like that. I wish you would make things come our way. You see, the raven is the creator of the world. And when you see the raven, you're seeing the living representation of this deity thing or deified thing. It's much different than when you just see a raven flying overhead and think, oh, look, a bird. It's just like talking to God, my teacher Catherine Atla told me. That's why we talk to the raven. He created the world. Indeed, in the Koyukon accounting of the world's origin, raven is the master or the engineer of the earth's beginnings and its transformations. These things known through a prodigious array of stories called Gadonsidni, or distant time as I would translate it, stories, which are often called folklore or mythology in our own culture, terms that do no justice at all to the meaning of these things. As Catherine said to me, these stories are just like the Bible. In other words, just the way the Bible would be to a very, very fundamentally oriented Christian. Mythology implies something false and something for entertainment, and these stories are anything but, although they're entertaining. The spiritual power of natural things is manifested in lots of other ways. Each animal has its own special attributes that lie beyond an outsider's knowing. For example, some animals' power is aesthetic. And in a sense, no one ever told me that this was a part of its spirit, and yet you could tell in the way that people spoke it that it wasn't just that it was beautiful. Levine Williams from Hughes said this to me. I couldn't write down exactly the way he said it, so I paraphrased it. Loons always come in after good weather turns cloudy and rainy around breakup time. If you happen to be in the right place at just the right time, you might hear a rushing sound coming down from high up above. Then if you look quickly, and if you can see well, you might see a loon diving right down headlong from the sky with its wings folded back coming straight toward that lake. At the very last minute, the loon will swoop up and fly level at great speed just over the water. Then it will make a long skim on the surface, finally stop, and then dive right down underneath the water. He said, and a minute later, you'll see it bob up and listen carefully. You'll hear it make a short little cry, a little soft cry. He said, it's letting everybody know. It's announcing, here I am. This is what the loon does when it gets here for the first time in the spring, he said. Or another time, he told me a Koyukon saying, which he translated loosely as, "When a loon calls on a lake, it is the greatest sound a human can hear." The literal translation of it is, "The loon's call is the standard against which all others are measured." I think you can probably relate to that, if you've heard it. Or consider this about the special attributes of the porcupine. Stephen Atlett told me this. He said, "Porcupines know all the country. Even though they're low to the ground, they really know the land. They're powerful animals. My old man used to tell me, the whole of Alaska is just like something inside a porcupine's hand." You see, for the Koyukon, no animal, no matter how lowly it might seem, is just an animal and nothing more. Even the least imposing of creatures, those that seem nearly insignificant from the lofty perspective of humanity, have dimensions of power in their being. It is not a world where humans can become too proud, because nothing that lives is truly humble, regardless of how it may appear. When Raven created humans, he first made them from rock, and people never died. But this was too easy, so he recreated them using dust instead. From this, humans became mortal, as they remain today. What is the place of humans in the natural order? In the Koyukon accounting of the world's origins, humans were created by an animal, the raven. And they lived in this distant time, this Adonsidni time, in a society of animal-humans. Humans are clearly and qualitatively distinct from animals for the Koyukon. But the two orders of being are much less distant than in human thought, than in Western thought. The closeness that I'm talking about here derives not so much from the animal nature of humans, but from the human nature of animals. So you see, in the distant time, as Catherine Atlas said, animals were humans. Animals still possess many human attributes, like the ability to understand language and to talk back and forth among themselves. Some animals, as I mentioned, are given funeral rites, the bear and the wolverine, for example. And animals may even have their own religious practices. The late Chief Henry, who was a very, very old man and died several years ago in Huslia, told of shooting and wounding a young caribou and seeing its mother return to it. This quote is from Eliza Jones' really exquisite book about the life of Chief Henry, which was published by the Alaska Native Language Center, and let me recommend that to you. And she says this in her book, quoting Chief Henry, he said this, "She came back to it, the mother caribou, to her young, and she started circling around it clockwise. And at the end of that, she put her muzzle where the blood was leaking down. She kept her muzzle down there for a while. I don't know what she was doing, maybe drinking its blood. And then she circled it clockwise again, and she put her muzzle on the other side where the blood was leaking down. And she kept her muzzle there there for a while. At the end, she took her muzzle away, and all that time the calf was holding up its head. And it pushed out its muzzle and shook itself like this, and then it took off, and it looked like it was flying upriver." And the late Linus said, "Look at that, she made medicine to her child. I guess she made medicine to it, and there was nothing wrong with it." So here you see the idea that we don't have in our culture, that animals can do lots of things that people can, because animals and humans are much closer than we think in our culture.
Anthropologist Dick Nelson, from a lecture entitled "Eyes of the Forest: A Koyukon Athabascan View of the Natural World." The final program in this series on the next program. This has been Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.